Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, one of our former guests, Gareth Greenaway, joins me as a co-host. And we're going to talk about Ansible Works, which is a way to get your systems up and running and maintained. Looks pretty cool. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Gareth Greenaway. Episode 257, recorded July 17th, 2013. Ansible Works. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I'm your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing you each week, oh, that's sort of a lie for the last few weeks, but as often as I can, the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the small projects, the projects you might not have ever heard of, the projects you might be using every day and not be aware of it. We are normally joined by one of our rotating panel of co-hosts. I am pleased to introduce a previous guest who asked me if he could be one of my co-host panel. I'll explain in a minute why I'm so dead, but Gareth Greenaway, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Randall. Thanks for having me. You're really jet lagged.
You're probably going to have to carry about half the show on this time, even though it's your first time as co-host, because I just got back. I woke up in London yesterday morning, and I went to bed in Portland last night only about 4 hours ago or 6 hours ago. So I am a little jet lagged. I'm probably going to make all sorts of mistakes. But, you know, that's part of the beauty of the show is I can be myself, and that works really well. So we'll talk more about that at the end of the show. But basically, if I make any flubs today, It's because, first off, Gareth, thank you for volunteering to be one of our co-panels.
Co-hosts.
A rotating panel of co-hosts. Why don't you just introduce yourself a little bit so that people have context for what you do and why we interviewed you. God, it was like 4 years ago?
Yeah, it was back in 2008, I think. So I'm Gareth Greenaway. I'm one of the co-founders of the Southern California Linux Expo. And I had reached out to you, Randall, 5 years ago, just basically saying like, hey, we have a show in Southern California. Would you mind if a couple of us would be guests on the show? And you graciously, accepted our proposal and invited us on, and we had a good chat of history of free and open source software and horror stories and generally had a good time, I think.
Yeah, and actually because of that conversation, we were able to, I actually have been at Scale now, I think 3 different years, although I think 1 year I only attended like 1 day because I was coming back from another cruise. So for some reason, this keeps happening, this darn cruises all the time. So
I know, I guess, it's a rough life.
And this was my 67th cruise I just came back from, so that was pretty crazy. So, yeah. So we talk a little bit more about Scale at the end of the show too, because you might as well plug your upcoming thing. I'm sure that even though it's halfway between through the year, I'm sure you're actually thinking about what's happening for the Scale in 2014. I presume so.
Yeah, definitely. So we're already planning things out. Our call for papers should be out relatively soon.
Cool.
Definitely talk more about that.
Talk about more at the end of the show, and let's talk about today's guest. Today's guest is Michael Dehan. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, so I'll probably ask him when he finally comes on the show. It's about Ansible Works. Ansible Works is one of these, from what I can understand from looking through the notes and stuff, is one of these things that it's sort of in the same space as Chef and Puppet and CF Engine, and there's probably a bunch of other ones that are in the same space too, which help you get systems up and running and also help you get systems maintained so that as you make changes and you update things in your Git repo or whatever, it will sort of keep that stuff up to date. It looks really interesting, actually, and it looks like it's being used by some pretty cool people. Have you looked at this at all, Gareth?
I did look at it. I haven't had a chance to play with it too much, but I actually gave a talk about a month or so ago at the Texas Linux Fest, and I kept mentioning, like, again, like configuration management tools, and everyone kept saying, like, oh, have you looked at Ansible? Have you looked at Ansible? And I had to keep saying, like, unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to. And so I made a point shortly after that of looking at Ansible. And it does look very interesting. It's very cool. And it's written in Python, so that's...
That's okay for me, but it's okay. As long as I never have to touch the Python part of it, it's okay.
Right.
Because it looks like it's got YAML configuration files and things like that, so that's going to work well for me. Good. Well, I think that the only way to really get the source of truth here is to go ahead and bring Michael on. Michael, welcome to the show.
Ed, thank you, guys. Very, very glad to be here.
And was my description sort of accurate? Let's back up a bit. What's the 30,000-foot view, and what problem is it solving?
Yeah, absolutely. So Ansible is a project I started about a year and a half ago, and what it does is it helps you configure your systems, helps you deploy applications on those systems, and also it kind of helps you with some higher-level IT orchestration things. So imagine you had 500 or more servers in your data center. How do I update them all and preserve my uptime? How do I do rolling updates and things like that? So it's general purpose, and you can do all kinds of things about it, but definitely one of the most popular configuration management systems on GitHub now, for despite being really, really new.
And I think one of the things that surprised me the most about it is that, you know, I'm used to things like Salt and CF Engine and things where you have to install things everywhere. The client machines will have to be specially configured. But one of the things I saw that really set this apart was the fact that you don't have to have any special client software installed. Am I describing that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we do is we actually manage systems over SSH. And a lot of people hear that and they're like, well, how does that work? Do you just run commands and do you process their output? And we don't. What we do is when we log into a system, and you can use your OS credentials, you can log in as you don't have to log in as root. You can sudo, you can manage things as all sorts of users. It transfers little modules to the remote machines, and these modules have arguments. And what's cool is they're tiny little programs that enforce the state that you want. So with all of these systems, you're kind of used to saying, this service shall be running rather than start this service. And when it gets done, it runs all the commands that it needs to run. So that allows us to be very, very efficient over SSH as well. And the nice thing is, especially for you, Randall, big fan of some of your Perl things, you can actually write modules in other languages if you wanted to. So as long as you can read an input file and return JSON, if you wanted to write a module in Perl or Ruby or something like that, or even Bash if you were into pain, right, you can do that. But all the core ones are in Python, and there's a little bit more support for making it easier if you do that.
And so how did the project get started? I mean, I'm sure you looked around and you said, well, we already have Chef. We have, Puppet, things like that. Why another configuration system?
Sure, yeah. There's a couple reasons for that. One is I always had an interest in multi-tier applications, right? So I kind of got involved with things through a project at Red Hat, and I can talk more about that later, called Cobbler, which I started. And I got exposed to a lot of early users in using Puppet and Chef and CF Engine. Chef was, emerging onto the scene at that time. And what I really wanted to do was deploy whole app stacks. So cases where I needed to deploy the web tier and then the database tier in a very specific order, share information between the two, to maybe set up my firewall machines and monitoring, and deal with load balancing and so on. I was working for a hosted web application in the past, a little bit before I started this, and I saw that they basically locked themselves in a room for 6 hours to execute a rolling update. And that's even with their configuration system, because they had to say, take this machine out of the load balance pool, take this machine out of the monitoring and update it. And what had happened was that, you're locking yourself in a room for this period of time, but people get tired and they forget steps. And, we'd always end up with a minor outage or a skipped step here and there. So I wanted to have a very finely ordered, very controllable system that could do those kind of things across my data center or my cloud setup. And I wasn't really seeing that available in various tooling. And I actually did some product management for the Puppet Labs guys for a little bit of time. And I think they did some very good things to improve on, CF Engine. But on the other hand, I was also encountering a lot of users that wanted a lot simpler of a learning curve. So even if you're not interested in like the rolling update capacity, one of the nice things about Ansible is it just uses very simple data-driven, very ordered steps. So you can kind of read it like a book, right? So we had a manager who said, I can give a list of steps to somebody. He can go write an Ansible playbook and bring it back to me. And I can look at it and be like, yeah, that's right. So it's very readable and it's very auditable. And I think at the highest level, I just wanted something that kind of fit the way that my brain worked. And to me, as a software developer, the infrastructure as code approach is good for automation, but I want to spend time writing application code. I don't want to spend time writing infrastructure code. So I want to be able to get in and get out as quickly as possible versus spending most of my day fighting the automation. So that's kind of my perspective to things. Definitely, you need to pick something that fits your brain, but Ansible is, in my opinion, a lot easier way to look at some of the same problems because it steps back and it says, these systems are just lists of packages and files and things. So let's boil down some of the jargon and keep it a little bit less academic. So it has a lot of interest right now from a lot of developers as well who are just using it with like Vagrant all the way up into sysadmins and so on. So yeah, it's simplicity, but it's also like the multi-tier orchestration kind of capability that I was looking for.
So you just mentioned Vagrant. I was just wondering, can this work with Vagrant instead of using their tools for the Puppet installer?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the most recent version, Ansible is actually included in Vagrant Core. So we're actually getting a fair amount of users that learn about Ansible that way. And what's sort of nice about that is, you have options, but if you just really want to say, I need to install these things, you don't have to, have quite as much learning curve. But yeah, it's in Core Vagrant.
So let me also, for people who haven't done this kind of job, my primary client right now, Nami Media, has 120 feed servers and 5 API servers, the front-end machines that the people actually type in and talk to, and a few database machines and a few couch-based machines. And on our biweekly release cycle, we have this giant whiteboard where we have basically step 1, step 2, step 3, and we check it off as we go through. And it's usually about a 2 or 3 hour process. And usually the longest step of that is, I think as you described this, is updating those 120 feed machines, because we have to do the steps in the right sequence. We have a Git tag that needs to be deployed, and then one or more of the local servers have to be restarted, like either Apache has to be restarted, or we also have now we've introduced a ZeroMQ server there, and we also might have a Moxie, which is talking to the Couchbase system. Would this simplify that and make the rolling out of those machines easier?
Yeah, definitely. So what you can do with Ansible is you can control how many machines you want to talk to in parallel, right? So I could say, I don't necessarily know your setup, but if you want to update those servers and not take them all out of the pool, it's really, really good about doing that, because it can say, I've got a group of this 100 servers and target 20 at a time, fully update those, and then stick them back in the pool and move on. So that's something it's really, really good at doing. And you can also order it to say, I need to update my database servers before my feed servers. And you can tell it things like, my other servers need the addresses of these other guys, right? And it can trade that information back and forth in some really easy ways. So for instance, a couple of our users have some pretty interesting use cases. So like Gawker, for instance, runs all of their content on us, so like Jalopnik and Lifehacker and things like that. And they actually have their software system hooked up to Jenkins. So every time new software comes out, every 15 minutes, they can roll out across their infrastructure, and their software's constantly updating every, 4 times an hour or more with Ansible. And the user doesn't see any downtime, because it makes it really easy to orchestrate that operation across their infrastructure.
So you said that Ansible, I think Randall asked the question, like it doesn't require an agent on the host system to actually manage the tools. What does it require, like at the bare minimum, if someone wants to kind of like start using it?
So basically you need Python 2.4 or later and a version 2 Python. So the world hasn't completely adopted Python 3. We'll deal with that when that happens, right? But in order to manage a remote system, you basically just need a Linux or a Unix system that has the basic Python, and you can get to it over SSH. On the control machine that you're running Ansible from, we don't require a server. That machine needs Python 2.6, and that's just because we wanted to use the latest features in the language and libraries and things like that.
Okay.
So you can start managing it pretty much stock. And if you don't have Python, you can actually use a raw command to install some extra things before you get started. In that instance.
And I'm assuming it supports, like, if you wanted to use SSH keys for management and authentication, you could do that?
Absolutely, yeah. I think most of our users end up using keys. There's some people that'll, you know, still be using passwords, or some people will be moving to, you know, Kerberized SSH. Free IPA is a pretty good project for identity management if you want that. And it'll work with basically anything you want to do. You can specify your own PIM files. You can use SSH agent. Which is, you know, kind of what we recommend. But you have pretty much all the options you want there. Go ahead.
So Ansible, in your mind, is kind of, is it a, just so I'm clear, is it a kind of full replacement for something like Puppet or CF Engine or Chef, or is it kind of like designed to kind of work with them?
Yeah, there are some people that have like existing content and they want to, you know, gradually move to Ansible, or they want to orchestrate some things on top. And that's something we it's fine and it works. But in general, I designed it from the beginning to be a full replacement, because for me, I'm not much of a Chef user, but I have a lot of track record with, you know, Puppet and so on. And it was really hard for me, even, you know, having expert level knowledge of the product, you know, coming back six months later, not remembering, and having to look things up. So I wanted to build a really minimal system that was very data driven and not have the, the programming language to learn. Right. So there's a lot of resource attributes that you'll see that they're very inspired from similar tools, where you can say, this package needs to be installed, or this service needs to be running, and so on. That definitely can replace the systems, and many people are using Ansible exclusively, and I'd say most of them are. But also has some, you know, app deployment capabilities on top, and that was a major missing piece for me, especially coming from systems that are where you have to wire in all the dependencies yourself. The ability to deploy an app with an ordered set of steps, maybe I, you know, have to push a shell script. You know, that's not necessarily a dirty thing. Make it easy to do those very ordered, very explicit things, and also be able to say very easily, based on the result of this previous command, decide what to do next, and be able to incorporate that logic as opposed to being so strictly declarative, right? So it can definitely be used for both the app deployment purpose and the orchestration, but if you want to, you know, completely replace your config management, I think that's where most people are really coming at it, is I need simpler config tools.
Okay. So if I'm using Ansible and I'm deploying some software or managing some configuration, and all of a sudden I realize, oh no, I've made a mistake. I pushed out something I didn't mean to push out.
Right.
What is kind of the rollback support or mechanism that you have?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this is kind of the classic example that most people will tell you, is that rollbacks are a very, very difficult thing in production, right? Because suppose you're deploying data in a database and you don't have a reverse migration, or the reverse migration is incompatible, right? So, we generally encourage people to move forward and fix their problem. But, one of the things that's really nice about what I talked about, the rolling update support, you can actually embed checks into your Ansible playbook and actually run tests from Ansible. And if an additional batch in your rolling update, suppose you had the 100 servers and you're taking 20 out of rotation at a time, if that 20 were to fail, it's going to stop, leave your 20 down, let you fix the problem, and not go down the line and update your 100, right? So that could be potentially disastrous if you're updating all your machines at once, right? And maybe you should definitely test very well in stage, but production's slightly different. You didn't catch something. Your production web service doesn't come back online, right? So we provide some interesting tools to do that in the update cycle. But what we definitely recommend for everybody is to keep your content in source control, so that if you do want to go back and get a previous version, you can do that. But it's definitely the truth that rollbacks are very application specific, whether you can do them or not, right?
Right. Got it. So question from the IRC channel. How big is the current Ansible developer community, and how many people slash companies are using Ansible currently?
Sure. So I guess the great thing about open source is you never know how many users you have. But I mean, I think we do have some interesting metrics on that. I think we have, according to Olo, I was checking this morning, I think we have like 340 some unique contributors at this point. I have a massive pull request queue to merge this weekend, which is going to be great. Really, really tremendous contributor rates from all over the place. A lot of people are adding new modules, but a lot of people aren't afraid to work on the core application as well. So I'm very happy to see that. Also a lot of people helping out with docs, which is great to see. User metrics are tricky. I do know right now we're the most popular configuration system on GitHub, which is nice. I don't know that we'll be that way tomorrow, but it's good to see. And I guess all the signs are there that people are picking it up and adopting it and liking what they see, but we're always listening to people for new feedback and how can we keep making things better.
Have you heard any feedback or any comments from anyone in the other like configuration management projects like Puppet, Chef, Salt?
Sure. Yeah. So obviously I think everybody has different ways of looking at some of these problems, right? So for a while, the Ansible takes this view of infrastructure should be very, very simple and ordered. And it's kind of a chef way of looking at things, but without necessarily the DSL. But then I think what thing is unique is, everybody's initially like, hey, I don't know about this push thing, right? But those push things provide additional capabilities in terms of how we can do ordering, how we can decide to vary commands at certain steps based on results of even on other hosts, right? So I could say, based on what happened over on this other host, decide to change the way that this operates, and so on. But in general, I think it's pretty favorable. People choose, kind of what fits their brain and so on.
Right. So another question from the IRC channel. If you could mention a bit about Ansible and what like clouds it currently supports.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a wide array of cloud inventory support today. So what that means is, like, if I'm using Ansible, I shouldn't have to define what host I'm managing. I should just be able to talk to my cloud and pull it in. So there's support today for OpenStack and EC2. There's support for Rackspace Cloud, which is obviously, kind of OpenStack based. There's also recently added some DigitalOcean support, which I haven't used, in Linode. And we can provision onto all of those as well. And also have some content, to help you set up an OpenStack if you really wanted to. The nice thing about the provisioning modules is they integrate very, very well with core Ansible. So I can say deploy a node and have it fully configured in one pass. So a lot of people are doing that. Not everyone necessarily has to. But it's nice to be able to see that I can deploy into EC2, have it fully configured, and then also use the EC2 load balancing module that got contributed by edX, which is pretty cool, to manage rolling updates across my cloud if I wanted to do that. So there's a lot of stuff in there, and if people are looking for more things, we definitely welcome additions.
Awesome. So what do you what direction do you see Ansible going in? What future support or what future features are you interested in adding or seeing people contribute to the project?
Right, yeah. So I think at this point, a lot of the stuff that we're doing is probably to enhance a lot of the modules that are there and, continue to add more. So there was an interesting paper in Harvard Business Review about, what makes an open source project really successful or contributors. And it's a place, it basically means that it's easy to add new things and see value. So there's a lot of work that goes on in every release to add new modules. So I think the last release, I don't recall offhand, we added like 30 or 40 new modules. So we're going to continue to do that. But also continuing to make the language easier. So we have various plugins to make things, interact with your data and so on, and continuing to expand that. But also, occasionally there's, language features that people like to have and things like that. So it's, I think we're kind of iterating based on everybody's feedback to the language, but the, you know, kind of keep going in the same direction that we're going is seems to be working out pretty well.
So I was taking a look at these playbooks that describe sort of how to get something deployed. It's sort of the written description of how I want the system to eventually look. And one of the things that I always find nutty about data-driven systems for configuration management in particular is that eventually you keep adding all the features in of a full Turing equivalent language. Like you have add loops and you add decision trees. How are you going to prevent that with Ansible Works, or has it already gotten to that point?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely resisting getting to that point. So I think what we kind of recognize is that in systems administration, you don't necessarily need the programming language in all cases. So we have some conditional ability for people to say, based on this command, do this. But there's some kind of higher level constructs that make that easy. So a playbook in Ansible, what it does is it says, select this group of hosts or this pattern of hosts and apply these roles or these rules to them. And you're actually able to do some really nice things about carving up groups of hosts based on criteria. So I could say, based on the all the web servers, now give me all the web servers that are running Red Hat, or give me all the web servers that are running Ubuntu, right? And then I can talk to them. And I can do that with a simple group by statement, and I can do that with my host selector, and I don't have to write those programming language constructs. Generally, we do see some cases where people are trying to program it too hard. And in general, I kind of step back and be like, hey, so what's the underlying use case here, and how can we best model this, right? So I'm trying to resist the urge to make it Turing complete because I don't want to program, right? I really want to have a higher level abstraction and a simpler way to look at things.
But it's really not. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
But it's really not a full thing unless you could do Towers of Hanoi in it, right? So you'd be able to do that. Well, you could deploy a Hanoi tower using Ansible. You'll know you're done.
Yeah, I think we might. It might be easier to have like an Amazon Web Services module that buys you Towers of Hanoi and ships it to you. And we could probably do that. Yeah.
Awesome. So what does a typical playbook look like? I'd like to get a little bit more down in the details here since we've really covered sort of the overall purpose of the project. So what am I interacting with? I'm interacting with a YAML file sitting somewhere, or what is it? What am I typing into?
Yeah. So Ansible has two modes. It has user bin Ansible, which just allows me to run, you know, one module at one time on a bunch of hosts, right? Which is kind of the ad hoc support. And that was heavily inspired by a tool I created with Adrian Likens and Seth et al. Called Funk back at Red Hat. And it was the Fedora Unified Network Connector, but I think somebody just wanted to call something Funk.
I know how that works, yes.
Yes. We had to get the acronym. But so Ansible Playbook is the main configuration management rules-based kind of thing. And what it is it's YAML. So, but we try to resist making it very nested, right? So I while it is YAML, I like to think that people don't really have to know YAML. It's not like we're going to use every bit of it, but it was a nice design choice because it's parsable by machines, but it's also easily writable with people. So like with JSON, you have to know about the trailing commas, and you always have to quote the line, but you can't add the trailing comma at the very end of something. So it kind of fights you a little bit. So I initially used YAML in Cobbler, one of the first kind of applications that did that, I guess, maybe not. And it was successful. But what you normally do is you say, of these groups of hosts in my inventory, you say, these are my hosts. And then you assign some tasks to them. And tasks are references to Ansible modules and the parameters they can call. But you can also say, I want to define some variables, or I want to load some variables based on files. And I can even use the discovered information about the remote system to decide what files to load, right? So I could have a file called CentOS.yaml that would automatically get pulled on the CentOS machines, and the Debian machines would load Debian.yaml. I can also, you know, prompt for information, or I could pass it in on the command line. But if people want to learn more, it's definitely hard talking about a file format. Was the phrase dancing about architecture, right? But the yeah. If you want to look, github.com/ansible/ansible-examples has some kind of full stack playbooks And what we tried to do there, rather than just having everything possibly uploaded, they're kind of, like I said, full stack. So there's a fully clustered Mongo implementation. There's a rolling update example with LAMP and HAProxy and Nagios, like all put together. So you can kind of see how they all fit. And one of the features in 1.2 is really a thing called roles, and that allows you to kind of make some of that more reusable and make it simpler. So there's some good examples of you know how easy that can be, and so on. But yeah, everybody pretty much works with the text editor and you know your source control and things like that.
So when you said earlier about invoking modules directly from the command line, is this something where I could say for all of my API servers, run this command, like a status command, or maybe reboot Apache or something?
Yeah, absolutely. So user bin Ansible, as opposed to user bin Ansible playbook, you can just say name of the group, and then you can pass in what module you want to run, and you can pass arguments to it. And the shell module, if you were to fire that up, then you want to execute, at 5 minutes, sbin halt or whatever. Absolutely. So it's kind of a lightweight waited if people are using cluster SSH or something like that, and they just want to use one tool for everything and use the groups that they have in Ansible to wrap that, then that it's definitely available.
So
kind of cool. Go ahead.
That'd be similar to the Salt implementation of execute this module and all these programs.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Is that part of your inspiration for that?
No, absolutely not. So almost started out as a user of Funk and Cobbler. So he got most of his ideas from me. Like the minion terminology was something that Funk used. YAML was something that Cobbler used. Globbing was from Funk. Minion to minion was from Funk. And I'm glad he did something. He kind of got out of the gate maybe a little bit before me. But those are ideas from previous projects.
You keep talking about Cobbler, but I bet a lot of our audience isn't familiar with that. Can you describe Cobbler a bit and how it compares with Ansible, if at all?
Yeah. So Cobbler is a project I started in 2006, and the current maintainer, James Carmarata, we actually recently hired to AnsibleWorks to help out with community things. So I'm super, super excited to have him joining us. But Cobbler is a data center provisioning tool. So suppose you had a whole bunch of machines off the truck, or you had a large data center, or multiple data centers kind of scattered all over the world, right? It helps you manage your pixie trees to bring those bare metal machines up to operating systems. It helps you apply IP addresses and host names, so it can help manage your DNS. It can remember your power management details to power them on and off. It can help you deploy various kinds of virtual machines at the Kickstart or the Debian Ubuntu pre-seed level. And it can help you mirror your packages and provide some interfaces around Yum Utils to make it very easy to create fast local mirrors of install trees. So Cobbler is used in lots of places, and it's kind of a little bit of a stealth project in that you don't hear people talking about it a lot, but it's kind of used in almost like everywhere in different capacities. So it's used to deploy the servers underneath the international DNS system. If anybody plays Modern Warfare 2 or 3, I'm not sure if they're still using it. Hope they are. I deployed those. It's, all over Wall Street, deploying some, very large 40,000 server data centers and things like that. So it's also written in Python, and it's basically, if you like Ansible, you'll probably like Cobbler. It's because I think I've gotten better as a developer over the years, but it's kind of the way I like to think of everything, very data-driven, very, very hopefully straightforward way to model things. And it's if you wrote your own in-house Pixie script thing and it's working for you, that may be great. But if you don't have anything and you want something that allows you to manage maybe multiple data centers or IPs and host names and power and so on, it's definitely worth looking at. It can just basically take a DVD you have and import it and start using that content instantly to bootstrap your provisioning environment, and you don't have to know about DHCP configs or how any of this this hard stuff actually works.
And so it sounds like that's actually the longest description I've ever heard of Cobbler, so thank you for informing me as well. It sounds like that would actually be complementary in the sense that I would use Cobbler to get my systems up and running from bare metal and then use Ansible to maintain that from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So Cobbler kind of stops at the configuration management level and kind of assumes, well, I've done what I've wanted in my Kickstart. And if people aren't familiar with that, that's the sort of the automation language for Red Hat and Fedora and CentOS installers. And then you basically just use your configuration management on top of that, right? So what you would do in your Kickstart is make sure that your SSH key is there. And then Ansible is smart, so it can actually dynamically pull inventory. I talked about all the clouds before, but it could also dynamically pull from Cobbler and has an example plugin to do that. So I can define my host there and then say all the systems in Cobbler in this particular group, go ahead and talk to them.
Cool. And so actually, I wanted to bring up a comment earlier. You said you switched from using JSON to using YAML. Most people don't know that actually, with a few exceptions, JSON is valid YAML. So you could still use that.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So the inline shorthand to YAML is very JSON-y. I guess what I mean is the quoting is still a little bit more relaxed. So at least with the Python JSON implementation, you have to do quotes and commas. And but yeah, you can definitely go into some nice shorthands.
So with the 300 contributors or so that you said you have on Olo, and this being a big GitHub project, how is the project managed? How do you, are you like the benevolent dictator for life and you just make all the executive decisions, or do you have a team of people now that sort of decides the roadmap? How does this all come together?
Yeah. So I sort of have been doing the BFDL thing, and I think that's kind of because I've seen with some of these other systems, when you have everybody contributing all the ideas, you kind of need a filter to make things consistent. But hopefully I've been that kind of filter versus this is the grand plan, right? So we definitely listen to everybody and we kind of see what people need. And when you hear like, yeah, I've, you know, have three or four people asking for something, it's a little more meaningful if it's just the one, right? But we have a mailing list that's very, very active, has, well over 1,000 plus contributors on it. And you can log in there and talk about Ansible and all those good things. We're on GitHub, so we have tickets, and we're on Pound Ansible on Freenode. So one of the things I think I've learned, especially coming from Cobbler, is there's a lot of genius sysadmins out there, and what we need to do is learn from them. And when we create projects, we're not really creating projects to accomplish the software goal so much as creating a community where everybody can go together and help each other and bring those ideas together. So if somebody has an idea for, hey, I know a really cool thing I can do with this cloud thing, or this would be a really nice module to have. Everybody benefits from learning from that person. So I think that's what I'm really trying to create in software. And it's kind of been the theme of my open source stuff, is make something that's very, very pluggable to where lots of people have lots of places where they can add value and add their own ideas, which has been working out pretty well for us.
So going back to the example of the kind of Randall introduced, where you're using, if you're using, say, Cobbler and Ansible in parallel, so you've got Cobbler, it spins up your machine, it's ready to go, and then Ansible kind of runs through. What is the kind of typical method of if someone is using Ansible, Puppet has like the Puppet daemon that runs every so often. Chef has, I think, an equivalent. What's the Ansible kind of methodology there?
Absolutely. So there's kind of two. One of those, we do have a pull based mode called Ansible pull. If you want to set those up on remote nodes, like if you really, really like the, that method that came from, an article on how scaling Puppet with Git, which is a pretty good technique back when they had a lot of performance, questions and so on back in the day. But what a lot of people will do is they'll just basically integrate it with Jenkins or run it on cron or something like that, which is a very easy way to do that. And we're also building some product things on top to make that easier. Not open source, but really, really cool stuff if you people do want to check it out. That provides some callbacks for things to phone home and configure themselves and so on. So there's lots of options. And there's also, for people, not everybody I find is actually doing periodic remediation. A lot of people are very interested, but then there's a lot of people that are like, well, my systems maybe shouldn't change unless I wanted them to change, because I might be covering up some other issue in some question, and they might just be running it in, you know, in dry run mode periodically or something like that. But that's something that's, you know, kind of in common with all of the systems.
Gotcha. What's the most interesting thing you've seen or heard about someone using Ansible for so far?
Yeah. So there's a couple of pretty cool ones. We had one guy, and he sent in a lot of great patches, and he's using us to manage a network of vending machines in Sweden that all have like cellular modems. And then there's also an interesting case where I think we're in some kiosks in the Melbourne Zoo, right? So if you want to go learn about the koalas and Tasmanian devils, Ansible may be helping you out. So because of the SSH focus, it's not something I'm really concentrating on, but it tends to be good for like embedded devices that need a small footprint and so on. So we're seeing a little bit of creativity in that area, occasionally seeing people managing Raspberry Pis for, you know, art installations and things like that. So it's there's some creative things going on.
Have you heard of anyone using it to an individual single user laptop or desktop or something, just to manage that machine?
Yeah, it's definitely pretty common. And I think I mentioned a lot of people doing Vagrant for their own, you know, development machines and bootstrapping my environment. So it's kind of a great way to get your feet wet, because the local mode feels just like the remote mode. So you don't have to, you know, set up a server or anything. All you have to do is say, add in the address of a remote machine, and now I can move from, yes, I'm comfortable with learning it locally on my machine, to now I'm managing, you know, my two machines and my six machines and my, you know, and pretty soon like my entire data center, right?
Right. What is Ansible, the license? What license is it released under?
Yeah, so Ansible is GPL v3, but basically if you write a module, that module is, you know, any license you want. So that's not really like linkage, because we're just transferring them. We've got some commercial stuff on top as well. So, you know, if you want a REST API and things, that's available.
Okay. I'm just curious, what made you choose GPL v3?
Yeah, I was actually at Red Hat Summit, and I was attending a presentation from, one of the you know, the major GPL v3 authors, right? And basically, he was saying at the time that how they were trying to clean up the language to make it easier to understand and more portable in other countries. So that definitely appealed to me. And then also, you know, just basic familiarity with GPL v2 and Red Hat. That was, you know, a logical choice. I wanted to make sure that the software remained free and that people contributed to it, rather than just say, you know, there became some sort of, you know, closed source fork or something like that.
Right. So what OSs is Ansible currently packaged for? I think Randall mentioned that there was a FreeBSD package available by you guys, but who else is packaging it so far?
Yeah. The FreeBSD package isn't actually from us. We have a lot of contributor-maintained stuff all over the place. So it actually doesn't require packaging, which is a really cool thing, so I should probably talk about that. But if you want to try the latest development head, you can just check it out on GitHub, and you can source in the hacking directory. There's an env setup script, and you do that, and then you're running straight out of source, and there's no packages to install on the remote machine either. So we have a lot of people just running off of, you know, straight GitHub. But it can manage all the BSDs. It can manage, you know, AIX and Solaris, HPUX, but you know, the majority of everybody is pretty much using, you know, some breed of Linux.
Is anyone using it with OS 10? Like either as a client
or
server?
Absolutely. So there's a lot of people running especially from OS 10 laptops. I won't say that the modules are necessarily set up for managing like all the aspects of OS 10. Like, you can definitely copy and do some basic things, but if people are interested in working on, you know, actual management of Mac laptops and things like that, very interested in, you know, stop by the list.
Cool. So you just had back in June Ansible Fest in Boston.
So we just kicked off our sort of our first user conference, and that was really successful. So we're going to be doing another one October 22nd in San Francisco, which should be downtown San Francisco. And you can go to our AnsibleWorks.com/fest, I believe, to figure out some more details about that. But yeah, we had lots of different attendees. We had speakers from AppDynamics and Juniper and Rackspace all talking about how they were, you know, using Ansible internally. A lot of good talks about how people were organizing their content and things that they were doing. Docker showed some really cool graphs of, you know, like their load during the rolling updates and things like that. So it was a great time to get together with a lot of different users and kind of talk about what we're doing and show off some things, and also you know, get to know people online a little bit better. So we're going to definitely, if people are on the West Coast or and miss the first one, check us out.
Awesome.
We need to get over to Europe to hopefully next year.
Yeah. And you have something happening at OSCON coming up?
Yeah. So we're gonna have a booth at OSCON, but I'm actually giving a talk Wednesday, so I'm not exactly sure the specific time. I'm up against NG's talk on Perl and YAML thing, so I'm a little disappointed. But if you guys want to learn more about Ansible and see some neat stuff, we'll have a talk Wednesday morning or afternoon or somewhere in there.
Awesome. So I saw it in the show notes, and I wanted to get an opportunity to talk about it because it just jumped out at me. There was a mention that you take photographs of road cones.
I guess that was my test to see if people were reading the show notes. So maybe I should share.
We do.
yeah. So for a while I had this thing where I was out of things to take pictures of. It's kind of a hobby. So I was taking pictures of traffic cones and giving them interesting captions, but haven't done too much of that lately, thankfully, I guess.
And you also play with analog synthesizers. What's that about?
Yeah. So you can see, that's the side over there. That's one of my Moogs. There's a little bit more of my stuff. So, electronic music is sort of a hobby. I don't recommend that anybody listen to much of my stuff, but things that bleep and make noises. And I've got a you know, nice little step sequencer, so I can do it without computers, and nice distraction from programming and things like that sometimes.
Well, back in the day, and back when I was in high school, it's like 1977, so I'm probably like before you were born kind of thing, but I actually had the idea that I would join the band. I was sort of, you know, tooling around with keyboards, and I was going to join the band by playing a very old classic synthesizer. I don't remember what brand it was, but this is I don't think it was a Moog. I think it was something like an off brand kind of thing, but it had like lots of modules and stuff like that. So Pretty cool. Anyway, we're almost out of time. I was just looking through the list to make sure that we were covering everything. By the way, I'm also at OSCON next week, and I'm actually giving a talk Wednesday also at about 2:45. So hopefully all three of these talks won't be exactly at the same time. But I would actually like to go see your talk because you've been a very very informative today, and I really appreciate that. Especially like we talk about this behind the scenes sometimes in the chat room, our chat room. That we really like it when a guest can ask one question and then the guest, you know, delivers like a 4-minute answer, because then we can actually discuss what the next question is going to be sometimes. So thank you for doing that. But is there anything we haven't covered yet that you would want to make sure our audience is? Oh, first off, let me ask. So you've got a lot of people contributing. Is there any particular area of people's contributions that you're still missing most desperately?
I don't know of any major gaps, but like I said, if anybody looks through the module list and you see like, hey, I'd really like a module for configuring X, we're kind of open to whatever that may be. You know, take a look at things. And if you have any questions, stop by Freenode and, let me know your ideas.
Cool. And do you have anything of the equivalent? I mean, these playbooks sound like they're somewhat reusable. I know that like Puppet and Chef have their repos of that sort of thing. Is there a separate way that I can just contribute my working playbook for my example, or does it need to be done with a fork request for the whole project, or something in between?
Yeah, so we're doing that a little bit differently. So I think what we're trying to do is kind of go from a batteries included approach by including a lot of the modules, which are the little Python programs that help you configure things, and then making it easier to put your nuts and bolts together. So the idea is that the Ansible language has a little bit less, significantly less learning curve. So it's easier to write your playbooks, and we kind of keep a lot of the logic in the modules, but, I think we're going to have, you know, kind of a role repository probably in the future, maybe not at the playbook level, but, you know, something that says, make it easier for people to exchange that. I've heard those referred to often as a great thing to do and not to do, because, you know, there's like 7 implementations of Apache and everybody's are different. And this one only works on Debian. This one works on Ubuntu. So, I think we've kind of been focusing on the core language, and the batteries included philosophy on the modules, so far, but I can definitely see that coming in the future.
And how do you manage the idea that on this particular system, the installer is Yum, and on that system, it's apt-get or whatever, and on FreeBSD, there's 4 different packaging systems now, and it could be any one of those. How do you manage that level of installation, or do you just sidestep it all by having the person specify it explicitly?
We actually do have people specify, and there's a good reason for that, is that package names are usually different. So you look at Apache versus Apache 2, and you look at sites.enabled in A2 Insight in Ubuntu versus how Apache is managed in Red Hat, right? So what we typically recommend is that people use the group by module in Ansible to sub-select their host of their different types, or they use a conditional that says, when the OS is this particular OS. But there is a variable fact if you want to say Ansible package manager and just do it. But it's usually better if you split that stuff out and you kind of think about what you're managing and how they're different. Because in the end, you're going to end up with different package versions. You're going to end up with a lot of different things. So I think we kind of do encourage people to kind of know their infrastructure a little bit.
Cool. Okay. And like I said, we're almost out of time. Is there anything that we haven't asked you that you want to make sure our audience I guess it's your audience today because you're on the show. You want to make sure the people who are listening to this want to know about Ansible that we haven't covered yet.
Yeah. I guess there's probably not too much, but if you want to learn more, AnsibleWorks.com is at the bottom of the page, and you can go there and there's documentation. Stop by IRC if you have questions, and that should definitely get you started, and github.com/Ansible. So yeah, thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Cool. And so wait, 2 last questions. You know what they're going to be, but if you've listened to the show before, what's your favorite scripting language? I better know what it is.
Yeah. My favorite scripting language is Python, but I learned with Perl, and I'm fond of it. So there you go.
Cool. Thank you. And your favorite text editor?
I'm a stock Vim guy, so I want to be able to go up to anybody's laptop and start using it. And maybe I'm just lazy for not learning all the options.
Another check in the intersection of Vim and Python. We've had many, many people who fall in that particular box. So it's fully cool. It's fully cool. Well, Michael, thank you for being a great guest and describing Ansible. I'm really excited about this now. I just found there's a Mac ports for it. So I'm actually installing that in a rear window as I speak right here. And I'm going to definitely upgrade my Vagrant because I've been having trouble with the Vagrant installation because it was always with stuff I didn't like or didn't know, like Puppet or whatever. So I'm glad that I can do this with all normal looking YAML files. That's going to be so
all right.
Finally. So thank you for being on the show.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Once again, thanks for having me, and see you all later. Bye.
Great. Yes. Great. So that was Michael Dehan, who I didn't. Did I pronounce that right? Dehan?
You're dead on perfect.
Oh, wow. I scored. Usually I'm like with people's names that I'm not familiar with, I get that wrong. Anyway, okay, great. That was Michael Dehan, who is the Benevolent Dictator for Life for the Ansible Project and also CTO of Ansible Works, which we didn't ask anything about, but we're out of time, so I can't go any further with that. Gareth, what do you think?
It sounds really cool. I'm excited to try it out myself. I like the fact that it's... I was a little uncertain at first when I first kind of started hearing about it, the fact that like there is no, it doesn't kind of act in the traditional server client mode. But the more I heard about it, the more I realized, hey, that's a really powerful thing, because no longer are you relying on basically like one server to kind of to rule them all. It doesn't matter where you're running the Ansible code from.
Yeah, I'm wondering, we probably could have gotten, we could have gone for another hour. I mean, there was just so much to talk about this thing, because it has so many moving parts to it. But one of the things I was sort of curious about as well is scaling. I mean, if you were going to deploy 10,000 machines with this, and you're having this one server chat with 10,000 machines, like whether that just takes longer, or whether at some point we hit were the opposite of an economy of scale, what would that be? The diseconomy of scale.
It almost sounded like you could divide that up. I mean, it sounds like it's fairly easy to do things programmatically. So you could say like, oh, this set of servers runs from this, is controlled by this Ansible host, I guess, and this set over here is controlled by this set. So I don't know if that's how it works, but that's what it sounded like to me.
Cool deal. All right. Well, speaking of upcoming guests, that's my aqua transition for the week. I have been lax. I'm sorry. I was on a cruise ship for like 10 days and I had real horrible internet both before and after that. So I haven't had a chance to book any more guests. So all we have coming up, I am going to be at OSCON next week, and maybe we're going to do a show live from OSCON, and it's either going to be whatever the hot news is that I can discover Monday or Tuesday, or it's going to be Kaltura as my fallback, and he thankfully agreed to be the fallback if I can't find something on Monday or Tuesday. Even if we do the hot topic on Wednesday's OSCON surprise guest, whatever it is, Kaltura is actually still in the slot for a couple weeks after that. So we'll get Kaltura on there one way or the other. It's a video production system, so it's great for doing video editing and end-to-end production, including publishing and things like that. So I'll be happy to talk to them, because I always like video solutions. OpsView is also on the calendar. That's an enterprise server monitor, so it's similar to, say, Nagios or what's the other one that I'm actually running?
OpenNMS.
OpenNMS, yeah, it's another one. Actually, they've been on the show, but I wasn't the host on that one, so I don't know much about that. And also, I'm running Nabix, which I actually heard about at Fizzlay a couple years ago. And Nabix is quite clever and has things like healing systems, so that if you get 10 hits, it all say it's down, you can actually execute commands to trigger based on that. And it has history. Hysteresis and that stuff. So I'm hoping OpsView does a lot of that, or if it's not, if it's just a monitoring system, that might be okay too. And Clockwork, which is a language and tools for process control. I don't know any more about that than what I've just written and what I just told you. So I'll just leave that as my notes. I'm still trying to fill the rest of Q3. I'm sending out emails. I'll probably send out some emails this weekend. I'm certainly hoping so. You can find out all our upcoming guests by going to the spreadsheet that is linked from twit.tv/floss, which is also our homepage for everything interesting about Floss Weekly. You can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google+. We also have a Twitter and Identica handles. It's not Identica anymore. I keep saying that. It's something new. And I still don't remember the name. I've got to write that down here. But Floss Weekly, all one word. As we mentioned numerous times today, we took questions from our chat room, which is at live.twit.tv. We go to that homepage, and you can either use the built-in IRC client there, or it also gives you instructions about how to connect to the IRC directly, which we also do. That's what I do personally. We tape typically at 8:30 a.m. on Pacific time on Wednesdays. Which is right now, actually. Well, it is while we're taping it, probably not while you're listening to this, unless you're listening to the live show. If you go to the spreadsheet, though, you can actually figure out our exact times. Sometimes we have to shift up or down or a different day, but that's pretty rare. We also, you can follow me at Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. And but more likely, you'll see more of my posts if you go to Google+ and look for Randall L. Schwartz. I post on a variety of topics there, mostly open source and things related to conventional wisdom of health being totally bogus. I love finding all the RCTs or randomized controlled trials, clinical trials that talk about how saturated fat actually isn't bad for you and red meat isn't bad for you and high carbs are really bad for you. This is stuff I've discovered in the last 9 months. I try to post a few of those every once. As I said earlier, I will be at OSCON next week. If you are at OSCON, please come up and introduce yourself and say, thanks. And as an audience member, and say, I listen to your show. Thank you. I appreciate that when that happens. And I'm back to SoCal in the following week, which is when I'll be I'll have the traditional background for this show. Right now you're looking at sort of the closet of my bedroom here. So it's not the most pleasing backdrop, but that's how it goes. This is also why I'm using the old Yeti mic, because the new Yeti Pro is down in SoCal, but the old Yeti is here back at my house. So that's how that goes. I think that's enough plugging for me. Gareth, what do you want to plug today?
Well, I'll plug the obvious. So Scale. Scale will be happening again in February down in Southern California. So the dates are, I know I'm going to get this wrong. I think it's the 20th, 21st and 22nd, somewhere around that time frame.
I bet there's a website. There is a website.
Yeah, actually. SoCalLinuxExpo.org has the dates, and it'll have the speakers when we get them, the call for papers when we launch it, which should hopefully be in the next couple of weeks, as well as the exhibitors and all the information people need to register, sign up, and come have a good time.
And Scale also has a lot of parallel conferences going on with it as well. I thought that was sort of an unusual thing. So there's the core that people go to and sign up for, but you also have like DevOps Day and other things. What are some of those, and how does that work?
Right. So the last few years we've added, we had a group come out that wanted to do an open documents. It was the Open Document Foundation. They wanted to do kind of like a Friday session of people coming and talking about open documents. And then from there, we added, free and open source in the medical field session. And from there, we've just had various groups come out and want to do Friday sessions. So like Postgres and MySQL. And we, like you mentioned, we've had the DevOps Day the last 2-3 years. Yeah, it's quickly becoming it's turned into what originally started as a 1-day show. It's now almost a 4-day show. So
cool. And you also have, there's also a puppet day, if I remember. No,
there was a puppet day. Yeah. Last year we had a salt day. We had a CF engine day. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if next year we have an Ansible day.
Well, there you go. And you said call for papers is opening a few weeks from now, but it's like, that's still like 9 months away from the conference. Why is there such a long time there?
We like to give people lots of time to submit. Speakers usually like take a long time to submit their talks. So we like to give people lots of time to kind of mull things over, decide what they want to submit.
Very cool. Okay. And if you want to hear more about Scale, we did the interview back in show number 46. My God, that was like years ago. But if you want to go to twitch.tv/floss46, you can hear my interview with Gareth, and I'm going to mispronounce his name, Shyam Kapadia. Kapadia?
Yep, you actually got it right.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Even being jet lagged, I'm not doing bad. This is great. I stumbled a bit at the beginning of the show, but that's okay. I've warmed up as we went on. Gareth, you were a great co-host. You were absolutely a great co-host. I would love to have you on anytime you've got the time again. You asked great questions and everything. So I appreciate that you came forward and said, hey, can I be a co-host? Because, you know, I have this rotating panel of four, now five, counting you, co-hosts. Mm-hmm. But we do run into scheduling conflicts every once in a while. Like two of my co-hosts both had something, two of my other co-hosts both had something they had to do today. And so I actually was almost thinking about canceling the show, but then I said, oh, wait, yeah, Gareth wrote me a few weeks ago. Let's follow up on that. So thank you for coming on the show, and I will have you back anytime you're willing to be back.
Awesome. I'm willing to do it anytime. That was a ton of fun.
Great, great, cool. Well, as I say, now I'm going to stumble over the ending like I stumbled over the beginning. What do I normally say at the end of the show? We'll be back next week from OSCON, live from OSCON, either with Kaltura or the mystery guest that I won't know about till Monday or Tuesday. And we'll see you all again next time on Floss Weekly.